Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a chocolate malt, and I love films. As Aristotle once said, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Knowing it's cool to go to the cinema on your own is the beginning of all great movie trips. Smart man. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Kevin Smith, Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, and even Bed Bambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian and award winner and star of his own HBO special, Mr. Leo Reich. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and videos with Leo. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Leo Reich is an excellent comedian who took the Edinburgh Festival by storm and then went on to record his special for HBO. I saw his show live and it was excellent. Definitely worth seeking out, and you can find it on Now TV and HBO and lots of other places. We recorded this on Zoom a little while ago. I think it's a brilliant one and I think you're really going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 285 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and good evening. It is Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a performer, a singer, a dancer, a model, a comedian, a groundbreaker, an award winner, a Gen Z-er, the voice of a generation, that generation being the Z, a legend, a person that broke the mold and the internet. He's bigger than that picture where Kim Kardashian had the champagne on her bum from above. He's a legend and a superhero and one of the greats. He's here. Can you believe it? Please welcome to the show. It's the wonderful, it's Leo Reich!
Oh my God, what can I say now to live up to that? Superhero, you said.
You are going to have to speak because it is a podcast. So
yeah, that's a shame, isn't it?
Hopefully we'll come up with some stuff to fill the time. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for doing this. You're in London. I am in New York.
Thank you for having me. My God.
Thank you for doing this. We haven't really hung out before, but I did see your show, which is now on HBO of all places.
I know. Can you believe it? Mad.
I can't believe it. It's fucking amazing. What a cool thing. I saw your show at the Soho Theatre.
I remember.
And it was brilliant. It was fucking brilliant.
Thanks. It was so nice of you to come. That show was the biggest out-of-body experience because it was half like comedians like yourself that I admire and I'm nervous to perform in front of, and then half everyone I went to primary school with.
Oh my God, what a nightmare show.
It was really weird.
Which is worse? Which is worse? Doing it in front of comedians or doing it in front of people you went to school with, if you had to pick?
I think they're bad in like exactly opposite ways.
Yeah.
Well, like the comedians, you really, really want them to like it and think that you're cool and interesting. And the primary school people, you kind of almost want to not like it and want to be like, I'm different. You don't know me. I'm not just a little kid anymore. I'm crazy. Do you know what I mean? Don't know. But it felt like a dream, you know, when someone from your primary school turns up in your dream.
Yeah. Did you have the fear that the primary school people would sort of heckle like, this isn't you?
Yeah, kind of. Well, yeah. It's also like they didn't say that they were... Have you ever had that thing where someone doesn't say that they're coming, but then does sit in the second row? Oof. So it's fully the like first 5 minutes of the show was me walking onto the stage and being like, oh my God, I haven't seen you since year four. And now I'm going to deliver an hour of jokes about anal to you. What? It's very strange. We have a very strange relationship at this point.
Oh my God. Also, people that you don't know well or people you haven't seen for many years are always the people that say, hey, we'll come to your show and heckle.
I know.
And you always go like, why do you say that? B, why do you think that's a fun thing to say? And C, why have you said that?
They also always turn up to the worst ones. Like, yeah. It's always like your first work in progress of new material and there are four people there. And you know all of their mothers. It's like so strange.
Yeah. Why are you telling us this stuff?
And I guess I shouldn't. I mean, I'm very grateful. And I hope they keep
coming.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
yeah, 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 yeah.
They come. Yeah. But isn't the fear of having a bad gig in front of anyone you know, the thing that I had a bad gig a while ago, and it was like the first bad gig I'd had in fucking ages. And it's such a like... profound thing, because there's no way, when an audience doesn't like you, there's no way of sort of explaining to them that you're good at this. Like, it's such a weird thing where you sort of go, you can't say, oh no, I'm funny, because they're going, but we don't, there's no evidence.
And yes, you sort of absolutely go, it's the most terrifying thing in the world.
I can't prove it, because you seem to
get up the reviews on your phone and be like, this is good. You do realize this is good, right?
This is good, honestly. There are other people, but it's such a mad sort of existential feeling where you're sort of like, well, I guess you're right. I guess this is...
I know, and you're because... so outnumbered as well. You're so outnumbered by them, all of them in their little seats, crossing their arms and frowning, thinking they're so clever. And yet you just want to go like, I'm replacing you with all new people tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they'll love it. Why not be more like them?
That's so funny to shout at an audience. Tomorrow's people are going to fucking love this. Well, also with your show, listen, and I say this genuinely, I can't imagine you ever having a bad show for a number of reasons. And it's very high energy, your show, and it has music and it has dancing and it has singing and it's kind of so forceful that I can't imagine an audience not getting on board with it. But did you ever have like a, oh my God, bad show?
Yeah, that's very sweet thing to say, but that is not... that's not my lived experience of performing the show, I wouldn't say. It usually got fine by the end, but especially when I did it in the States, there was a real thing of like, because it's all like kind of ironic.
Yeah.
And the whole thing relies on the audience knowing that I'm joking.
Right.
And not thinking this is a sort of earnest, like confessional show about my real life. And especially in the States, it would sometimes take a good 40 minutes for people to start going, oh, he doesn't, maybe he's not like this.
Fucking hell.
It's crazy. Sometimes they would clap there's like a lot of things where like there are earnest setups of like, there should be more diversity on Love Island or whatever. And full round of applause. People going, yes! What? Anyway.
Yeah. Because I think the more I think about this a lot, like I know there are like comedians who like a real sort of low energy, deadpan, sort of throw it all away. And I always think when you're like that, it's like, well, it's easier to have a bad gig when you're like that because you can sort of pretend you're not doing anything. You'd be like, well, you're not meant to laugh. I'm not doing anything. Whereas, yeah. And then there's middle version, then there's your version, which is like, it's so full on that if they're not laughing, fuck, you've really committed. You've really gone for it. Yeah. There's no way so, you're going, yeah. I am doing something here. You're definitely doing something.
Yeah, totally. In Edinburgh, there were a couple, because you know that classic thing happened where I got a couple of good reviews really early. And then the latest shows in the month got like booked up by like, and I say this with so much love in my heart, old people who in general don't like the show so much. And there's something so devastating about by the end of that show, because I was in a little box, I was drenched with sweat and like panting, having run around for an hour. And for the lights to go down and then come up for the applause. And it's just like a light smattering with like very confused faces. Meanwhile, there's like eyeliner running down my face. I've given them everything and they're going, oh God, he seems unwell. It was really just humiliating.
Oh God. Oh, that makes me stressed. Can I say something serious about your show?
Yeah.
And we can cut it if it makes you uncomfortable. I thought about your show a lot afterwards. It's very, very funny and it's very, like, it's just like a wild ride and it's really fun. But actually, I actually thought that it was like sad, as in that there's a kind of howl, if I may be so serious, that it's sort of a howl in that it's so ironic and it's layers of irony and irony and irony. And it's kind of seems like a scream into the void, like, what can we do? Like, what matters? Because it's so hard to make sense of it all, that there's layers upon layers of layers now, that it's very hard to be sincere and to be emotional because everything's become so diluted. I don't know what the word is. Layer, dilute, taken out of context, moved into things that... What are we? Is what it's sort of like. It actually like was quite sad.
Yeah,
as like a statement of the times. Is that fair?
Yes. I mean, it always makes it sound so unfunny, but I think it's hopefully meant to be that. I've wanted it to be sad, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, it really depressed me. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, great. Okay, great. Yeah. Great. Because sometimes the other weird thing about doing it, like so many times, is that people have really weird reactions to it. People would go like, oh, it was so great because I have a son your age and he's gay and that made me feel way better about that. And I was like, what? That made you feel better about it? Okay. Didn't make me feel better about it. I'm scared for your son. No, it was definitely like a kind that I guess that the like core of it is like you said, like a kind of inability to say anything that feels authentic or to speak about the very like real material problems that we all know are going on. Is that like, it's just impossible to find any language that feels like it can deal with those problems or talk about those problems in a way that's affecting or interesting or doesn't feel kind of shallow. Or kind of like an ad. I think that so much of writing it was like watching loads and loads of ads and taking all the stuff out of ads and being like, this is hysterical. This is an ad for like, I don't know, like a bank, and it's talking about kind of diversity and inclusion, which simultaneously doesn't advertise the bank and also sort of debases like the language of diversity and inclusion and makes it meaningless. And it's just like watching that stuff, it was especially over lockdown, just made me feel insane. So I felt like I had to run around on stage for an hour and scream.
Well, it's fucking great. Yeah, I mean, it really did. It was like a really, really, really fun ride, really entertaining. And then at the end, I was very sad. When I'm sad.
Good.
So yeah, I'm glad. Well done. Yeah.
That's my favourite reaction.
Yeah, I was depressed for a week. So thank you very much. 5 stars. Saw your comedy, depressed for a week. No, it's brilliant. Are you starting a new one? Are you mid a new one? Do you feel incredible pressure of a new one, given the massive success of the first one? Are you just having a time?
I haven't started a new one. But I think, I don't know, I've been talking to other comics. I wonder how do you feel about it? I feel like I want to make it really different to the first one. And that might take a really long time.
Interesting. Yes. I think, well, you know what? If I may, serious answer. Yeah. I think that's brilliant. And do exactly what you want. And you're an artist and continue to be an artist and follow whatever thing you want. I think there is a strange reality often with critics, I think, where basically if you do something different, some of them will be like, well, I liked the other thing. They're just going to compare it to the other thing. And that's it. Just basically ignore whatever anyone says. Because then if you also do the same but more, they'll say it's the same but more.
Yeah, it is weird. Comedy reviews are so strange. That's another podcast. But what are they up to? Don't know.
What are they doing?
It's every single one has something baffling in it. I've never read a single review of a comedy show where I haven't been sort of baffled at least one point by what they've chosen to say.
Yeah. It's like with anyone who talks about comedy, I will not name the person. There is someone in comedy that I know lots of people that like slag this comedian off and they go, he's rubbish. And I go, well, he's not. Like, he takes the roof off. He does exactly the job of a comedian. I've been in the room. He's an amazing comic. You might not like it, but he is a good comic. You can't. Look at the roof coming off.
When it's like when people, I always get really annoyed when people are like, that's not comedy. Like, as the reviewer's like, that's not actually comedy. It's like, it is. Might be like bad. You can say it's bad.
Yeah. It is comedy.
We are all watching it and it's comedy.
Yeah.
You know what? It feels like a kind of like, I don't know, it feels like people think they're doing something really clever by going, actually, if you really think about it, that's not comedy. It's like, well, actually, I did think about it and it is.
Yeah. I sort of went to see it thinking it was comedy and I laughed.
Yeah.
So you haven't started a new thing. Like, it's a big deal. You obviously built that show you did for a long time and it has been a huge thing. Have you let go of it? Are you done with that show? Was that a joy to let go of, having done it for so long?
It was a joy to let go of.
Right.
To be honest. Well, also because I was... Because it's first show. It's like classic first show thing where pretty much every joke you've ever written is in it, or everything that you thought was good enough to say on stage is in it. And I think that there's at least one joke in the show that I think I probably wrote when I was 18. And I'm just like, that is enough. We can't be saying that. I'm an adult man now. I don't want to be saying the words that an 18-year-old boy came up with professionally. That's so strange. Also, it's helpful because the special came out on this, like, 16th of December. So I think something about the year ending, and it's like, new year, I'm done being a comedian. What next? Teacher? Yeah. I don't know. Something.
Could be.
Not saying no.
That'd be nice. Well, there is something I forgot to tell you, actually.
Go on.
And I was thinking this when I first, when we first logged on and we were setting up. I probably should have told you then. I did make a note of it as well. Hold on. You've died. You're dead.
You're kidding.
No, I'm actually not. You're dead. Fully.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of my plans.
How did you die?
I walked off something because I was on my phone.
Like a pier or a bridge.
Yeah, a pier. I walked off a pier because I was on my phone doing so. I was sort of engrossed in looking at the names of the people who'd viewed my story, I think, probably.
Wow. So you were you're in Worthing. You're in Worthing Pier and they left a little gate open and you were like looking down at your phone, just walked off the end of it.
Yeah, but at least now I get to have on my gravestone, he died as he lived. Walking along Worthing Pier.
Looking at his own Insta stories.
Yeah, his own Insta story. I would say, actually, I'm going to come out as saying that by far the person whose Instagram stories I view the most during the day is my own. I'm constantly checking back in at my own Instagram story. Sort of, I think I try and do that thing where, do you ever do this where you're like, what? Like, you try and almost forget that you've posted it and try and look at it with the fresh eyes of a stranger, being like, what would I think of me?
How often do you chuckle to yourself looking at your own Insta story and say wistfully, that's brilliant, that is?
All the time. I also sometimes, if I'm having a sort of like crisis of personality, I'll just scroll through my own Instagram page to sort of remind myself sort of what I'm like.
Yeah, your successes and whatnot. Yeah, that's great. So you fell off Worthing Pier. Was the tide out? You just smashed into some rock.
The tide was out, yeah, so I hit rock.
Yeah, fuck. Jesus.
I know, it wasn't even a dramatic splash situation. It was just full, like, thud. Well,
I think it was more dramatic because of the rocks, to be honest. But yeah, the sound was different. People didn't notice for a while.
Yeah, you know when, like, a ball hits wet sand? Oof. That kind of, like, thwack.
Horrible, actually.
I know, it's so humiliating to die with a thwack as well. It's like, come on.
Eesh. Those rocks. Well, God, that's tragic. But, I mean, it really helps the sales of your special.
And really, you know, that is the point of being alive, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Do you worry about death?
No, I actually don't. I worry about... and this is going to be so profound.
Go, preach.
I worry about being alive more than dying.
Yes.
So I'm going to stitch that on a t-shirt. Scared of death? Honey, I'm scared of being alive.
Totally fair. Very scary. Like
the death will be a huge relief to us. I mean, to me and to, I imagine, many members of my family and close friends. Just get it done. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I'm so overwrought. I'm so anxious.
Yeah.
It'll be like heaven. It'll be literally like heaven.
Yeah, it will be literally like heaven. Yeah, that's a hot take. It is scary being alive. It's scary being alive. But that's just, so your view of death is it's not going to be scary. And that's nice.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that scary. Well, also, like, the thing about life is, famously, I don't know if you've heard this, it's finite. So every day it's like, better make sure I fill it with stuff. Better make sure it's worth my time. Whereas death, it's like, don't worry, stay in bed all day. There's more of the same tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't worry about a thing.
Death has a real kickback quality. Like, just have a stroll. Like, you know, you can walk around wearing clear. You don't need to check your phone yet. You got time.
Exactly. I don't think I'd use my phone even. I think I only use my phone because I'm trying to maximize my time on Earth in some way.
So when people ever say, stop looking at your phone, your answer is, life is finite.
Yeah. I often say that to my mum at dinner. Life is finite. I have a limited number of chances to look at my own Instagram story.
This is brilliant.
Itself tomorrow. Yeah. Brilliant.
So you do think there is an afterlife? A pretty chill afterlife?
I don't know. Well, again, I feel like, because I'm sort of in this relaxed space vis-a-vis death in general.
Yeah.
I would genuinely say I don't get the kind of, why is everyone so hysterical about whether there's an afterlife or not? I don't care about that.
Right.
I've never... I'm like, yeah, maybe. But guess what? I'll be dead and everything will be endless.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter anymore.
That's interesting because I guess when people are like, God, I hope there is, those are the people that probably want more life.
They just want to be
so
alive.
You're like, let's not worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like they're forgetting, when they're talking about an afterlife, they're forgetting the crucial element of the afterlife, which is that you're dead.
Yes. Well, you don't like the word life in afterlife.
I don't like the word life in afterlife.
You're hoping for less life after death. Yeah. You don't want the stress.
The fundamental quality of it is that you're not alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
It feels like a case of missold, you know, but then really misselling that.
Yeah. It's just afters. You just want it to be an afters.
It's an afters. It's an endless afters.
Just everyone fucking mumbling on pills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But not at the paranoid phase yet.
Yeah.
Well, good news, I suppose, in a way, depends. There is a heaven, but it's like an afters and the good bit. And it's filled with your favourite thing. What's your favourite thing?
Food.
Right. Oh, it's food. It's like a giant buffet, but like COVID-free. Just a huge buffet. It's like a mall, you know, those like round the world buffets, but it's good shit.
I love that. Shit. That's a real like childhood holiday thing to me of like being let loose on a round the world buffet.
That's what it's like.
Every individual cuisine is like butchered in a way that you couldn't possibly imagine.
Yeah. No area accurately represents the country it's supposed to be repping.
Yeah.
That's what it's like in heaven. Yeah.
And good.
Yeah, and you'll love it. And everyone's very excited to see you. Big fans. They love your Insta stories. When you arrive in heaven, they're chuckling. They're looking at it, chuckling. They're going, that is brilliant. And you walk in, they go, oh my God, he's here. And they all want to talk to you about your life, but they want to talk about your life through film. The first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Leo Reich?
The first one I remember seeing is Finding Nemo.
Shit the bed.
Yeah.
That is a hardcore first film.
It's a hardcore first film, and I remember it. It can't be the first film I saw, because I think I must have been like 4 or 5. But I went to the cinema to see it, and we were on holiday, and it was Disneyland, Florida. And they did one of those like 5D experience whatever things, where they like spray water on your face and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember the beginning of Finding Nemo. What happens is a huge barracuda comes and like mass murders the eggs and the wife of the main fish, fish one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then swims off into the darkness of the depths of the terrifying ocean. And as this is happening, my five-year-old face is being like, the seat's like moving around and I'm being sprayed with water. I lose my fucking shit and leave. I'm like, I have to get out of here. I'm like sobbing. Let's go. I've had enough. So I don't watch one more frame of the film Finding Nemo. So to me, for many years, Finding Nemo was a very short, quite formally experimental animated art film about death. Right from the jump. I mean, really, they do just like land you in it.
It's a devastating film. It's fucking heartbreaking for most of it. Sure, there's a couple of jokes here and there, and there's some lovely side characters, but it's a devastating film about a father trying to raise a child.
Absolutely.
It's heartbreaking.
Oh, I mean, it's also, of course, one of the best films in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's, at the same time, absolutely fucking hilarious. It's so funny.
It's so...
That fish cannot remember a thing. That's hysterical.
That fucking idiot fish.
That fucking fish. And you're in the audience are going, Dory, love, write it down.
Dory, babe, listen. Thank you for lightening up this film.
Five times this theme, you've forgotten something. You're kidding.
But then fucking Doreen makes you cry at the end. Just when you think you're safe, you go, oh, we're safe with Doreen. She's I know, right, some brilliant,
some brilliant voice acting from Ellen, I think. Amazing. And also ingrained in my memory, which is actually a very clever meta element of the film, P. Sherman, 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney. We'll never forget it.
Yeah, amazing. So what is the film that made you cry the most? And are you a crier? Are you
I'm a huge crier. Huge crier. To the extent where I feel like, as a connoisseur of crying in films, which is maybe my favourite thing to do in the world, I feel like there's two answers to this question, because there's happy cry and there's sad cry. There's like kind of, oh my God, the joy of being alive. It's all so moving and beautiful. And to me, that is It's Wonderful Life, of course.
Wonderful.
Is the quintessential, I'm on my hands and knees just bawling my eyes out from minute one. And then sad cry, I think probably Grave of the Fireflies.
Fucking hell.
Which is just like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah.
Just, what? These children are contending with the harrowing magnitude of war, and they're animated.
Yeah.
It's mad.
It is a cruel trick of animation where you're like, I don't know why at any point we assume we're going to be all right with a cartoon, given that all of the cartoons are absolutely devastating.
I know. I don't know. There's something in my brain that sees a cartoon and goes, this can't hurt me. And then cut to an hour and a half later and two children are mourning the loss of their hometown being destroyed in a nuclear war.
Have you ever seen When the Wind Blows?
No.
Ever seen When the Wind Blows is a film by the man who made The Snowman. And it is a British film about a lovely, very sweet, lovely couple living in their house. And a nuclear bomb goes off in the distance, and very slowly over the course of the film, they die of nuclear poisoning. And it is fucking horrendous. And it's just them going like, oh, we'll just make a nice cup of tea. And one is like, they start sort of coughing and say, I feel quite tired. And it's fucking unbelievable.
You do think, I mean, that is the kind of stuff you're getting pitched at an afters. Someone is like, off their head and going, yeah, I just want it to be about the mundane decay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a metaphor for how life, in a way, is just slowly dying. And you're like, oh, God, who are you? Did I meet you at the club?
And he goes, I made the snowman. And they go, oh, fuck, that was a hit. Okay.
Yeah, what were you doing at GAY then? Aren't you old?
What is the film that made you cry? No, what? We've done that one. What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I love being scared. Do you like being scared?
I love being scared. In films.
Yeah, in films. I love it. I don't know why. Yeah. I guess a little, I don't know. But the thing that I think there was like a moment, you know, when you start watching scary films and it is genuinely gutturally terrifying because you haven't like learned the tricks yet.
Yes.
So every single one gets you. And weirdly, the thing that got me the most was the opening sequence of Scream, right. Which is, of course, an absolute, probably in my top 10 favorite films in general, definitely top 5 horror films, probably top 5 comedies. It's so funny. But that first scene is like really scary with Drew Barrymore being chased around her house by the ghost face man. It's psychotic.
Fucking great set piece. I watched it again recently. Holds up. That is like a masterpiece 10 minutes, that is.
So good. So when her boyfriend's on the porch, oh my God.
Yeah.
I remember watching it. I also, to add to it, I watched it on a plane, which is terrible in general, but also the fact that it scared me so much and I was on a plane and I was watching it in a tiny screen on the back of someone's seat, it really still, I was like, oh my God, someone turn the lights on this plane. It's too dark.
Everyone open your windows. Everyone. Yeah.
Genuinely. Fuck.
It's great. Good answer.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
What is the film that you love? People don't like it, critics don't like it, but you love it unconditionally. What is that film, Leo Reich?
It is the film and its sequel, starring Steve Martin and Jean Reno, the Pink Panther.
Huge. It's don't think it's ever come up on this show. Please tell me everything. I am a Steve Martin fan till I die. Love him so much. Please talk to me.
I think we have memory hold it as a culture. What I will say about the first Pink Panther film, and I've actually spoken out about this previously because I feel very passionate about it, is that Beyoncé is in that film and performs an original track that is not available anywhere online, but is so good, called A Woman Like Me. It's the production value is so high. Steve Martin is just giving his all to every second of offending French people, both in France and across the globe. Jean Reno is there for God knows what reason and also signed on for a sequel. It's crazy. It's a crazy little film. Every joke is like kind of the worst joke you've ever heard, but in a way where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they put that in. You know when you like at the Fringe, you go and see like a student sketch show and you're like, yeah. this is objectively, this is the worst thing that's ever happened, like on a quality level. But in terms of how much joy I'm feeling from the top of my head to the bottom of my body, this is the best piece of art that's ever been created, because you're having a laugh. I'm having a laugh. The material's so bad that it's circled back to being kind of boundary. To make Beyonce, like to, honestly, to make Beyonce stand there while Steve Martin goes into a, there's a bit where Beyonce has to react to Steve Martin going into like a recording studio that he thinks is soundproof and then farts really loudly and then comes back out. And she has to like act like she hasn't heard it. And if you just look at like, just sort of see that from the third person for a tiny bit and go, that is Beyonce from
That's funny.
Being famous, fame.
Yeah.
And she's doing that. Smell the fart acting.
Wait, listen. A man going into what he thinks is a soundproof booth of farting is objectively a very funny idea.
That's brilliant.
That's brilliant. Listen, also, people were like, how dare he do Pink Panther, the great Peter Sellers? I may be so bold as to say the original Pink Panthers ain't that great. Dare I say it? We're not talking about flawless masterpieces. They're quite boring.
Totally. And it's also like,
dare I say it?
Oh no, you've made the Pink Panther look like a joke. It's like, yeah. Yeah, of course, that's the whole concept of the Pink Panther, is that like stupid stuff happens all the time. Are we going mad?
Yeah. What is the film that you used to love, but you've watched recently and you've gone, oh, I don't like this anymore, thank you very much?
This is hard because it's not happened to that many things. I think there's two sections. Half of them are like, oh no, I found something out about the production and now it's creepy to watch this. Like Blue is the Warmest Color, yeah. Like Manhattan,
yeah,
like that kind of thing, where you watch it and you're like, oh no,
yeah,
I wish I didn't know all the information about this. And then the only other ones I can think of are like really, really teenage boy films that are made for teenage boys, and there's a period of being a teenage boy where watching like Reservoir Dogs is actually the, like, you feel endorphins that have yet to be described by science. Or like you're watching Batman Begins and your jaw is on the floor because you can't believe the genius concept of, I think they're putting poison in the water in that film or something. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But at the time you're like, whoa, that's so clever. And then you go back, and it's not that I don't like Reservoir Dogs now. I still think it's good. It's not that it doesn't hold up. It's just that it's like, it's not hitting my nervous system in the way that it did when I was 15 years old, or watching like Django Unchained, being like, this guy is the cleverest man who's ever lived. He's taken a story about history and he's changed parts of it. Whoa. And he says, is everyone so rude?
Everyone is very rude.
And you can't
very,
believe it.
Very, very rude. Yeah.
I remember. I really remember going into school the day after I watched Pulp Fiction and being like, guys, you will never guess what. I discovered a really hidden gem last night. It's basically this art house classic about how violencism is really fun to watch.
That is it. Fuck. Interesting. Tell me this, Leo Wright. What is the film that means the most to you? Not the film itself, could be shit, but the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it meaningful to you, Leo Wright, please.
Well, this is my first repeat answer because it's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, okay.
And I can't be watching the Pink Panther again. Yeah. it's a Wonderful Life, which I watch every Christmas Eve with my family. and grandparents who come from Wales. And there's a thing in it. There's a specific moment in it where he goes, where George Bailey goes to the school dance, and you've seen him as a kid, and you've seen Mary, his love interest, also as a child, in the candy store. And she whispers in his ear, "George Bailey, I love you till I die," because he's got a trick ear and he can't hear what she's saying. And this is 4 minutes into the film. I'm already just shed so many tears that it could flood a country. I'm barely listening to the dialogue anymore. I'm just heave-sobbing. But there's a moment where, in the flash forward, where he goes to the school dance and this guy comes up to him and he's like, "Oh, George, would you dance with my kid sister? It'll give her the thrill of her life." Like that kind of thing. And then the camera, and he's like, "Oh, I don't want to dance with her." And then he stops mid-sentence because he's seen her across the dance floor. And there's this shot of her face. And it's the first time Donna Reed appears in the movie. And she is lit like she's an angel. And it's like, just the strings swell. And she smiles and she stops talking to the person she's talking to. And it's like incredible. And every time that happens, my granddad makes this noise. And it's just like the most beautiful thing in the world.
Oh, shit, man. Ah, shit, you're going to make me cry.
She appears, and it's like, all right, on cue, my granddad goes,
That's so sweet.
Yeah, because he's so overwhelmed by her beauty and the romance of the moment.
Okay, well, you got that answer correct. Well done.
Great,
well
thank done. You.
Next, what is the film that you most relate to?
Oh, this is any film where... you know, one of those films where the reviewer is like, "Yeah, this is okay," but at a certain point, you just feel like the main character is so unlikable that it's like, why are we following? Why should we care about this entitled brat wandering around doing nothing?
Yeah,
and I'm like, it's me, it's me. Oh my god, it's me in The Worst Person in the World. It's me in Tiny Furniture. Francis Ha. It's all me.
Yeah.
Any of those films. Also, another one was anything. I really like watching a film where you're like, that is the perfect representation of everything I hate about myself. So, like, Rushmore was a huge one for me. Watching Rushmore as like a 15-year-old and going, oh my God, that's what I'm like.
Yeah.
Just unbearable. Like the most sort of precocious, like, nerdy but like entitled and like, I don't know, just irritating kind of like self-aggrandizing delusions of grandeur, thinks he's an adult, is like writing a play always. That was so me at the time, just always sort of like telling people that I'm writing a play.
Have you written a play?
Yeah, I've written a play.
Are you gonna put on a play now? Is that what's next?
I'm ruling it out. Are you going to put on?
Yeah, I'm putting a fucking play. He's putting a play.
Let's put a play. Put a fucking play. Two-hander.
You're putting a play. You just have to make it not boring. And that is the real challenge of a play.
Oh, well, we're putting on a play. I'm sorry. If we're going to put on a play, we're going to put on a play. We're going to make it boring.
Okay, we're doing a proper play.
I want to do it right. If I'm taking something to the theatre, I want to honour the art form and make it extremely boring.
Okay, so plot-wise.
Jokes in it that aren't funny that everyone hysterically laughs at.
So plot-wise, nothing's going to happen. If you were to summarise, it would be like one night in two old friends reunite and nothing happens.
Yes, and it's about the death of the American Empire.
Yeah. Okay, we could do that. We could bang that out.
Yeah, absolutely. It
could easily be an hour, but it's going to be 4 hours. And with no change to the plot, no addition, no more incidents happen. Over the next 3 hours. Okay, great.
Yeah, perfect.
And at the end, the sun rises very slowly in the background, in real time.
I think it should be in blank verse as well. It should be fully Shakespearean.
Fucking hell. God, even... listen, I'm a yes-ander, and when you said that, it made me sick. It made me sick and go, I don't know if I can even yes-and the blank verse.
I want it to have that if I ever do a play, I want it to have, you know, when you see a Shakespeare play and they do the kind of, they try and make it funny and they do the sort of cheeky Shakespeare voice to the audience where they're like, and do me a sec for a bundle of sticks or whatever. And you're like, what? Don't say that to me like I meant to know what that means, because I don't, because that's old language. Stop trying to bring me into this. I'm not in it.
Oi, stop trying to pretend that this is fun.
Yeah.
All right?
I'm not going to
fucking fall for it. I'm not going to fall. This is fucking Hamlet. Stop trying to pretend this is fun. I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Leo, sexy right. films. So few. This was really, I was thinking about this and I was like, there are so few actually sexy films. Sexy films really hard. There's.
I can't agree, but go on.
You can't agree.
I find it fascinating. There's not many people on the podcast. It comes up occasionally where people go like, I don't know if films are sexy. I'm like, am I a sick pervert or are you mad? One of us is mad.
Wait, what's your answer for this? What do you say?
Any film.
Any film? I find it sexy when people are speaking Spanish. So
yeah.
The sex scene in Y Tu Mama Tambien, I think, is really sexy.
That's a perfect answer. Part. There you go. You get it.
Yeah. And also Law of Desire, I really like. The Almodovar film.
Yeah. You get it.
There's sexy bits in that. I think that I like that maybe more because there are sexy bits in that where people aren't having sex, but it's still so sexy. Like, there's a bit where she gets drenched with a hose and it's like fully pornographic. And she's no one's naked, no sexual stuff is going on, but it's still somehow like the hottest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, she's getting drenched with a hose. It does sound.
Yeah, as I said it.
Sort of. Really, there's nothing sexual about it.
I was like, this isn't the sort of mundane situation that I'm billing it as.
What about Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons? A film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. Maybe that's any film for you.
Yeah, I mean, Frozen, maybe?
What? The sort of incest element? Is that what's troubling?
Just a nice little... They're drawing those people very nice, I would say.
Very nice.
Very nice. The big reindeer man, the princess. Mm-hmm. It's all working. The other thing, this is just a weird crush that I have at the moment on someone. I watched Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret.
Great film.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. So good. Every film should be like that, in my opinion. But I weirdly had a real crush on Benny Safdie in that.
Nice choice.
I said it out loud to my family, thinking everyone's going to agree with me. And everyone said, that's one of the weirdest things I've ever heard in my life. Because I think they've intentionally dressed him ugly.
But then he's a good dad and this sweet man. He's kind and he's trying, you know, he's gentle and... He's rugged, he's doing stuff in the garden, you know, he's trying.
In the garden, he's getting a little muddy in the garden.
Yeah, he's getting hosed down, that's your thing. Well, I think for someone who doesn't think films are sexy, you've really got this correct.
I don't think films aren't sexy, I just think it's like really hard to get it, to do it right. Mm. Like there's rarely a film where I'm like, this is genuinely, they've nailed the sex.
Seen Out of Sight with J-Lo and George Clooney.
I'm going to get on it. Well, this is the other thing. The other thing that I think ruins sex in movies for me is when people are too hot. If the actors are too hot. Like if you're looking at something, this is why the Marvel guys, whenever like a Marvel, and it's why I can't really, I haven't seen that Sydney Sweeney.
Anyone but
Glenn
you.
Glenn Howell thing.
Anyone but you.
Anyone but you. Because I'm like, if I saw either of these people in real life, I'd turn to dust.
Yeah.
It's not real. It doesn't make sense to me that it also with like that male physique, you go, some part of my brain goes, I can't sleep with this person. This person spends all their day in the gym. They don't have time to sleep with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I've wondered that about, that is a fair concern.
Yeah. It's like a really big timetabling issue, I think, involved. There's a scheduling conflict. Every day you're having a scheduling conflict. That's not a healthy relationship. Yeah. Oh, I can't come to dinner tonight because I'm doing an ab workout and having athletic greens.
Yeah.
No. I want to eat something with loads of butter in it.
Yeah.
With someone a good four notches more ugly than that.
I don't think Glenn Powell is the one for you. I think Benny Safdie is a safer choice.
I think so. Can you break it to Glenn Powell?
I will, and he's going to be fucking furious, but
I know.
I'll let him know. It's important not to lead him on anymore.
I know, I'm really sorry.
What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
This is also so hard, obviously, hardest question in the world. You say Singing in the Rain, right? That's the house answer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the house.
I think that's pretty good. I think that's like that's probably the best answer. Mm. In the mix, I would say All About Eve, maybe.
Nice, very nice.
But the only thing about that is like I feel like the best film ever has to look pretty sexy. Mm. Like you have to be able to like draw to mind like a classic image.
Yeah.
And All About Eve, although it's like, I think probably the best acted and maybe one of the best written films ever. And it's also very Hollywood-y, which feels right for this question. I'm not conjuring a frame. I can't see. I can't see the mise-en-scène, Brett. You know what I mean?
You don't have posters of any frame from it on your wall.
No, yeah, exactly. And whereas something like Bridge on the River Kwai.
Beautiful.
Or Lawrence of Arabia.
Beautiful.
You could have every single frame is a dream.
Lawrence of Arabia is fucking great. Yeah, go on.
There's no joke. I want at least one joke, probably.
I think there is one joke in Lawrence of Arabia, and I can't put my finger on it. I'm sure there's like an early bit where he's being charming, where he says something vaguely humorous.
Yeah, I'll go with that then. I'll say Lawrence of Arabia, even though it's sort of, I'm sure, deeply problematic in a myriad ways. But the bit where, that one transition where they have the match and it turns into the sun.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm sobbing again because that's incredible. Yeah. The fire of the match turns into the fire of the sun.
Are you kidding me?
Imagine coming up with that. They must have been jumping for joy.
By the way, in our play, that's what happens at the end. One of us lights a match and then the background is a real-time sunrise. Real-time, and it takes an hour and we sit in silence.
That's genius. If we can pull that off, we'll have done a really fine play.
We'll have done an actual play.
Yeah, which is kind of the ceiling for doing a play, I think. That's pretty much as good as it can. We did a play. It's pretty much all you can say about doing a play.
Yeah. God, they really did a play. I was very bored. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again? And if this is a repeat, that's okay.
It is probably It's a Wonderful Life because I watch it every year. But the one that I'm always like, oh, stick it on, is Four Weddings and a Funeral.
That is a fucking great film, for Weddings and a Funeral. It's so good.
It's the so best. Good.
It's so well written and structured and directed and acted, and it's fucking funny. It's really good and kind of undervalued. Yeah, because of everything that came after it.
It's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Yes, like I'm a huge fan. The bit where Kristen Scott Thomas is wearing a black satin slip dress. She's in a room in a Scottish castle. She's wearing a gold bangle for some reason on her like bicep in a fashion that I've never seen before or since. And she tells Hugh Grant that she's always been in love with him. Is just the most amazing, painful, powerful, like earnest scene. Also in the middle of a rom-com to do such an earnest, no jokes in that scene. Yeah. It's just this kind of side character being like, by the way, I'll always be depressed because I'm deeply in love with you and I know you don't love me back. And it's like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Been there, honey.
Yeah. It's like Chloe in Smallville.
Yeah.
There's something about Four Weddings and a Funeral, and I think it's Mike Newell. There's something about it. It's like, this is a fucking classy film as well. Like, it feels like something about the way it's shot and it feels big. And not cheesy. There's something very, like, it's quite cool. It's a great film.
Like, the style of it, the kind of clothes and the haircuts, it's all, like, shabby enough.
Mm.
You feel like they're real people in a way that in the later Richard Curtis films, you're like, you've done shab. Like, shabby is the point, but you've paid £1 billion for that turtleneck jumper. Whereas in Four Weddings, it's like, you truly picked that up in a vintage shop and you look like a guy I know. Hugh Grant weirdly looks like a guy I know in that.
Interesting.
A hot guy that I know. For sure.
Sure.
With a guy.
With the looks.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah. A fuckable guy.
Yeah. That's it. It's sort of not glossy, right?
It's not glossy. And people's hair is bad. Like, their hair is like fully bad as some of those characters. Mm. and they felt wear stuff that doesn't really fit. And the weddings are like nice, but they're not clean. Yes. It's like they're in a big marquee and you can see like bits flapping off the marquee. It's still a really nice wedding, but it's not like, oh my God, they clearly have a production team making sure that that bit doesn't flap.
Yes.
I mean,
it's got flappy bits. That's what makes it.
Flappy bits.
It's the flappy bits.
And then at the end, she says, is it raining? I haven't noticed. Great. Job done. Incredible film. And he reads Stop All the Clocks in the middle.
Yeah, fuck. And that was huge. And now that's the very thing that happens a lot. They did
it first. That put W.H. Auden on the map.
Yeah.
No one cared before.
And also, she's so in love because it's really raining.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even, it's not like a drizzle. It's not spitting. Like, it is a torrential downpour. Boring. And she hasn't noticed. Like, that's love.
That's real
it's
true.
It's raining, bruv. Like, you know what I mean?
That's for weddings and a funeral too.
What is the worst film you've ever seen? Let's not be too negative, please. But what's the worst film you've ever
not
seen?
Not be too negative. I have such vitriol. I'm a real hater.
Oh, no.
Well, I feel like, again, there's kind of two ways a film can be bad. It can be bad because it's like, this is badly made. The acting's bad. The script's bad. You know, the Room style or like Highlander 2, whatever. And you kind of have a laugh watching it, but it's not super serious. It's like, oh my God, these people made a bad movie because they're not really good at making a movie. And then other films are bad because they're like evil. Or like they have like a spirit of like satanic darkness deep within the logic of the film where you just are left haunted for days by the memory of watching, for example, Bohemian Rhapsody. And you just can't get over it. Or like the Iron Lady really did that for me for some reason. I was like, this is keeping me up at night that they've made this. But the one film that really is the pinnacle of both bad in both ways to me is, I don't know if you caught the film Sucker Punch when it came out.
The Zack Snyder dreamscape girls in an asylum being very hot and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually seen Sucker Punch.
Truly. And my experience was probably the best cinema experience I could have had because it was after school. I was maybe 14 and I was having this like weird sort of psychosexual relationship with a boy in my school. And we were sitting next to each other and he was fully feeling me up through the whole film. So I should have loved it.
Yeah, this
sounds like a great day out. And I was so turned off by the character development on screen. Then it made the whole experience really just traumatic.
Were you like whispering, I'm so sorry, these backstories are making me flaccid?
The one thing I will say about Sucker Punch, which I sometimes go back to just to sort of make myself feel more, I guess, calmer in this job, is I watch it, I'll watch the trailer and I'll remind myself, they let him make another film after this. Someone let him do that. Many films. Mm. Many, many films after he made Truly. I really recommend it. It's absolutely insane. Every sequence is somehow bad in like seven different ways, but like ranging genuinely from like morally reprehensible to just like looks ugly and everything in between. And you just can't believe it. And they really pack a lot in as well. There's like a lot in there. There's a World War I sequence. There's a samurai sequence. There's a bit where they all do a lap dance that is so hypnotic that they manage to escape the prison kind of sex dungeon that they're all enslaved in. It sort of slightly hints that it's feminist at certain points, but everyone is in purely a bra. It's just nuts.
Are you sure this isn't the greatest film ever made? I'm confused.
It actually walks that line sometimes. Sometimes you're like, wait, is this genius? And then one of the characters will say one of the lines that they've written. And you go, no. No, it's not genius. Boy.
Well, you're in comedy. You're very funny. You're a bloody award winner. What's the film that made you laugh the most? Leo, right?
This is a basic answer, but unfortunately, I do think that it is just true that the funniest film in the world is Bridesmaids. For me.
It is. It hasn't been beat. It hasn't been beat since, I don't think.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I just really... And I've seen that film maybe 20 times and every single time I'm like, And it's really entered my vocabulary in such a big way that I will do the intonation of, oh, Helen knows the owner. just every day of my life. The rhythm of it is so in me. It's so great. Yeah. Bridesmaids.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
There's one thing that annoys me about Bridesmaids. Can I speak on that?
You can speak to this.
Can I speak to this? Can I speak to this issue? There's one thing that annoys me about Bridesmaids. It's the only flaw in an otherwise perfect film. Is that when she is leaving John Hamm's house and she gets stuck on the gate.
Mm-hmm.
They use birdsong in the background. And the birdsong they use is a chaffinch, which is a European bird. And the film is set in America.
Wowie.
I'm like, guys, you were so close.
That is interesting. As someone who has occasionally been lucky enough to make stuff, when you go into the sound mix, always the first thing that they play you is so much birdsong that you're like, where is this scene taking place? In a sanctuary? There's so many birds. Too many birds.
Often, it really takes me out of it because I'm like, I was a massive, obsessive bird watcher when I was like in my early teens, which sort of explains quite a lot.
How does that start? And what are you doing all day? I've never quite understood it.
How does it start? I don't know. It's just sort of long walks in the countryside. You'll see a bird. You'll be like, you'll go, what's that then?
Right.
That is. And one thing leads to another. Suddenly you're watching Bridesmaids and you can't invest in the characters because there's a chaffinch in the background. It's a very slippery slope.
So you're like collecting, seeing a bird, a different type of bird. Is that
different
the game?
Kinds of birds, yeah.
And then you're like, I wonder where that bird's going.
That kind of stuff. You're kind of constantly going, oh my God. Well, it's one thing I do think is really underrated about birds. This isn't the theme of the podcast, I do realize that. But one thing that's really underrated about birds is that they can fly.
Yeah, it is amazing. You do really take it for granted.
I'm sorry, that is like... that
from
is
standing crazy. As well, from a standing start.
From a standing start, they are suddenly flying through the sky.
Pretty cool.
And we're all just like sort of walking around the park pretending not to see it. It's fucked. Look at the bird.
So do you still bird watch?
Occasionally. Got my binoculars. I'll have a peep out the window. See what's up.
Because to be like, you know, there's like observing the world. Oh, look, there's a bird, lovely. But to be a bird watcher, is there like, is it sort of like a thing of like, can you see this rare bird that's very hard to see? Is that the buzz?
There's a little bit of that.
Thing. Right.
There's a thrill of the unexpected. So if you're like in a place and you're like, this guy should not necessarily be here, but then here he is. Because nature is magic.
Great. So basically it's like being on acid.
It's exactly like being on acid.
Right. And do you have to like take a picture of the bird or is it just for here? Just for the head? It's not like Pokemon.
It's not about that.
Right. It's about being present and enjoying.
It's about being present in the moment. Also, it's so hard to take a picture of a bird because, as we mentioned before, they're often like flying around and sort of moving
from
about.
From a standing start.
And such.
From a standing start. Do you have bird watching? Is there a community that you will write to or call? I just saw this bird and they go, wow.
There is, of course, the London Birders Wiki page for latest sightings that you can add your sightings to. There's also, I follow Pembrokeshire Birds because that's where my grandparents live, West Wales.
Fascinating.
No good bird movies, though. Not really a single good bird movie.
There's a new film called Migration coming.
Okay.
Or maybe it's out now. It's an animated film. I suspect everyone dies and it's tragic. But maybe not. It's Illumination. Might be more fun.
Yeah, that was Rio.
I
couldn't really get on board with that.
What about the fucking Flight of the Things, the documentary?
Flight of the Things, the documentary?
You know, Flight of the Things.
March of Penguins.
Yeah, March of Penguins. Do they count?
Do they count? I mean, you're picking the one bird that doesn't fly. Way to miss the trick.
Yeah, you're right. But there is a film that follows the birds migrating and they put like sort of mini balloons on the birds. They had like cameras on the birds for their migrating pattern. I think you should
That kind of doesn't gel with my appreciation of birds. Is very much like leave it a mystery.
Right. Okay. So it's a very peaceful thing to do, this bird watching malarkey.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. Because you feel very, you have to kind of give up your sense of control. I'm quite like a controlling and sort of control freak. And so when you're watching a bird, you're like, that is not to do with me.
Yeah, wow. So do you sometimes set aside a day? I'm going bird watching this afternoon.
Yeah, big time.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's what I think of bridesmaids.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen. Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12. Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver. Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
Leo Wright, you have been an absolute delight. However, when you was walking along Worthing Pier, looking at your Insta stories, and you were doing a little game with yourself, you looked away for a bit and you thought, imagine I'm just a guy. Imagine I'm just a normal person and I know nothing. And you looked back down at your Insta stories and you shook your head wistfully and you said, this is fucking brilliant. And you chuckled, you're looking at it. And you walked straight off the pier. They'd left a gate open because they were fixing something. The tide was out. And like a bull landing on wet sand, your face went straight through a rock. It was dark. And I was walking around the beach with a coffin. You know what I'm like? I was on my holidays. And I go, eesh, what? That's a mess. What's that? And I go, oh, no, that's not. Oh, is that voice of a generation, Leo Wright? Who will speak for that generation? Oh, my God. And I turn around, there's people wailing because... they don't know who will speak for them. And I go, I'm sorry, guys. And they go, but remember, that special was so good, he never has to follow it up now. And they went, oh, you're right. And they all started clapping. They felt better. And I said, and remember, now he'll never write a play. And everyone went, oh, this is great news. This is such great news. And I said, help me with this. And we had to sort of get you off the rocks, but you were like stuck in some of the rocks. So some of the rocks coming with you. I'm going to like smash up bits of your body. Anyway, get all of you in the coffin. It's rammed. Sorry. It's very busy in there. There's only really enough room for me to slip one DVD in the side for you to take across to the other side. But on the other side, it's movie night every night in the round the world buffet made by the man at the beginning of Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show the food people in the food court when it's your movie night, Leo Reich?
Food people in the food court will be treated to a beautiful, potentially, depending on the time of year, anachronistic showing of It's a Wonderful Life, I think. It's got to be done.
Go. When Donna Reed appears.
Yeah.
Leo Reich, what a delight. Is there anything you would like to tell people to listen to, watch out for, or any such thing with you coming up?
Not really, just the special. It's the kind of endless hell of releasing something silently to streaming. Yes. Is that it's still very much available to watch. Do watch it. It's a laugh.
It's very good. It's very, very good.
It's on HBO Max in the United States of America. It's on Sky and Now TV in the United Kingdom. And it's also in Australia, but I can never remember kind of why or how. But it is. If that's kind of your thing, you're in Australia.
If your thing is being Australian and living in that country.
It's also, I think it's available in, I want to say Norway, because I'm getting a lot of Instagram DMs in Norwegian. Unless that's from something else. But I don't know what it would be because I haven't done anything else.
Yeah, I think you should look into that. Leo, I've enjoyed this immensely.
Me too.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day. Good day to you, sir. So that was episode 285. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Leo. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. It helps numbers, etc. And it's very much appreciated. Thank you so much to Leo for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Bip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics, Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another cracking guest. Thank you all for listening. I really hope you're all well. That is it for now. Have a lovely week. And in the meantime, please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.